I'm Blake Hardcastle. This is the Stories You've Missed podcast. Hello, and welcome to the podcast Stories You've Missed. These are accounts of God's amazing grace in the lives of ordinary people at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. And I'm your host, Blake Hardcastle. I serve as the spiritual formation pastor at Grand Parkway, and this podcast is designed to aid the building up of this local body by recalling the amazing works of God. Today, my guests are Barkley and Jill Peschel. Barkley is from right here in Richmond, Texas. He attended SMU and works in commercial real estate. Jill is from the Spring area and went to Stephen F. Austin and works as a second grade teacher at Fort Bend Christian Academy. They've been married for 18 years and have three children, Caden, 16, Gracie, 14, and Bella, 8. Jill enjoys cooking, baking, and reading, and Barkley likes all the other stuff, fishing, hunting, and shooting, and golf. They've been at Grand Parkway for 3 years, so welcome, Peschels.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right, and you today are here to retell, to share with us your experience of God's grace in adoption.
Yes.
So take it away. Where do you start? So you have one adopted child.
Yes.
Which is our youngest, who is Bella. She is 8 years old. So our journey began about 9.5 years ago, maybe. We went to Pine Cove Family Camp, and while we were there, we met a really awesome family from Dublin, Ireland. And they are missionaries here to the Houston area, and they were involved in all sorts of different kinds of ministries, some trailer park ministries down in the Woodlands area.
And so Houston is in such need of
missionaries from other countries. Yes.
Ireland said,
Ireland.
You Houstonians,
I know.
You're in trouble.
Lots
okay.
Yes.
Keep going.
So anyway, yeah, we thought that was fun. But, and one of the ministries that they talked about a lot that week was a ministry called Little Footprints, and it's in the Montrose area. And it's basically a mom and pop shop, adoption agency, also a ministry. The adoption part is called Loving Houston Adoption Agency. Little Footprints is the ministry side of it. It all falls under the umbrella of YWAM. Mm-hmm. And down in the Montrose area, there's a parking lot where every Wednesday night, they set up with these plastic little gates a child care area. They set up chairs. They have, and pretty much homeless people from all in that area. There's a bus stop right there. So a lot of people come from the bus, get off on the bus, and they have a church service. They get fed at the beginning. They get fed again at the end. They have a service in between. They also can stand in line, and there's clothes, shoes, coats, all that kind of stuff where they can get that kind of thing. The Little Footprints, they have a van there where they provide prenatal care for homeless pregnant mamas that are street moms.
Okay. And you find out about all this
from these people at camp.
And you went to family camp to find out about this kind of
stuff? No, we went to family camp just to go to camp, and I didn't even want to go.
Yeah, it was, you look back and you see how God orchestrated this whole deal. It was last minute deal.
Last minute going to camp. And you don't, and not everyone's excited about it.
No. I grew up my whole life, like, I feel like all I've ever done is go to church camp, and now we're going to go as a family, and I'm like, I don't know about this. Yeah.
Pine Cove, Aruba. No, not the Pine Cove.
July in Columbus, yes. 110 degrees, and so, but we knew the kids would like it, so we went. We said, oh, we're doing this for the kids.
Yeah. And all along, the Lord was sovereignly orchestrating.
Oh, big old plan in place.
It's crazy. So our now great friends who
Josh
we met
and
there,
Debs.
Josh and Des Walker, during that time, what's great about family camp is you have time with the husband and wife get away, and the kids are getting taken care of by these great counselors. And they got up and gave their testimony. Mm-hmm. And part of their testimony was that they had adopted their youngest through the street church ministry.
Okay.
He was abandoned, found just wrapped in clothes there behind a dumpster.
On a, like, just laying on a chair. They thought it was a puppy.
And it was, and, wow. And so he's now just what an awesome part of his family. And it was, Jill and I were sitting there, and I remember it was like God broke our heart at the same time.
Yeah.
And she just, as they're doing that, she's got tears and she looks over and me and I've got kind of tears and she says, "No, you know, we're going to adopt a kid, right?"
And I said, mean, I didn't know before then, but I knew at that moment.
I said, "Yeah." Wow. And just rewind, we had literally a 20-second conversation in our marriage prior to that time about adoption.
And you've been married for 10 years at that point.
Yeah, we've been married
for
9 years,
something like that.
We just had the conversation of, hey, if for some reason we can't get pregnant, we're adopting a kid. Like, I'm meant to be a mom. I know that's the desire of my heart. I know God put that there. So whatever it looks like, we're going to be parents.
Okay.
Never discuss it again. And that was probably even
before we got married. Yeah, okay. that was probably before we ever got married.
And so then... Got to have a little bigger plan.
Family
here.
Camp is multiple days long.
It's like a week.
A week. And so where in the week did this happen?
The first day.
Like the first full day.
Okay.
And so.
The kids come back. Hey, how was your day? It's a lot of fun. We did this. What did you guys do? We decided we're adopting. How did you. how did this come from God lands on your heart to it expands to your kids?
We spent a lot of time that week with that family, being around their kids. They had three kids of their own, and their youngest is Gracie's age. So at the time, Gracie was maybe 4-ish, and so Isaiah was 4 also. Mm-hmm. And so we got to be around him, and we found out all about his story. And it was really once we got back home, because
this kid left in a blanket.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's Gracie's age. So he's a freshman in
high
school.
South Houston Moses.
He is
all but a river in a basket.
He is a basketball star. Oh. And at the time, you know, when they found him, when they pulled the blankets, he was covered in scabies and he had mold on him and just, you know, hadn't been taken care of.
Yeah.
Malnourished. Yeah. They'd been putting Tabasco on his pacifier to keep him quiet. Like those are the things that are very common in the homeless community with the way they treat their, you know, their babies or whatever. But we came back home and there were a couple of other families that week that kind of thought, oh, yeah, I think we're going to do this too. Mm-hmm. And like we all kind of spent time together talking and stuff. And ironically enough, we're the only ones that really followed through, I guess, or, you know, we knew that this is what God said to do. And it became a choice of, are we going to be obedient or are we going to be disobedient? And so we came home and I think within 2 weeks, they happened to have a set of classes starting because we were licensed through the state of Texas as a foster family.
And you had already been licensed?
No.
Okay, when we came home 2 weeks later, we start the process, all the classes.
Yeah.
I mean, basically every bit of your life on paper, you have to turn over.
Right. Home study and all
that. Yeah, but like just the reality check is you get home and you get away from camp and you're thinking, all right, did we really hear from God? Was it just a camp high and we just felt really good?
Yeah.
And so it might have been within a day of getting home, we called our best friends, Jeremy and Amy, and said, hey, let's go to dinner.
Right.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
And so we just wanted to bounce it off of them because, I mean, strong believers, we love them. We, cherish their advice and input. And so, Jeremy said, okay, first thing, does it line up with Scripture? We're like, all right, take care of the widows and the orphans.
Yes.
There's nothing there that
doesn't do
that. And not like just one verse, lots of texts.
Yeah, millions.
Lots of verses. And so it was pretty clear, that easy to
check
box. And then you start saying, am I crazy? Is this... And like Jill just said, we had to make the decision then and there, were we going to be obedient to the call that we felt like we had to do that?
Right.
Or were we going to give into our fears and give into our doubts? And we just, thank goodness those classes were right after we got home. Mm-hmm. And we just,
don't think about it.
Just do it. And just so we just started, started the process.
And those classes help alleviate or fight against some of those fears?
They pretty much perpetuated the fears. they made them worse.
Yeah.
So how did he?
Because right then, that's when the almost like the attacks began.
And they tell us that because it's a Christian based ministry, and so they're like, you're going to start getting attacked.
You're going to start seeing the
spiritual warfare going on.
Yeah. Some attacks that you maybe have never seen before.
Is there an example that you remember you'd care to share?
One in particular, well, we felt them throughout, but one in particular, one of the first really big ones was that once we decided this is what we're doing, we started the classes, we told our families, and my parents were okay with it. They mm-hmm. were, of course, you know, they're the normal fears that parents would have for their kids.
Everybody, what if the child is
what if the kid's on drugs? What if they're addicted to crack? Yeah. What if the blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, we can what if all day long, you know.
And none of them are like, you know, and what if they're going to be a Pulitzer Prize winner? What, you know, none of the like
no, and I'm
amazing
like, what
things.
If it's the, what if we are need to adopt the next Billy Graham, okay?
Right.
What if? But his parents in particular were very unkind.
Okay.
And so it was a year-long
They weren't real supportive.
They were not supportive at all, and they told us, we will not support you. And we were like, all right. And that's where we really... And my parents were supportive. They kind of they gave into their fear at different points mm-hmm. and voiced some different things, but overall they were like, okay. And I think that we had to wait for some time for our true placement and what God had for us, because I think God had to work in the hearts and the lives mm-hmm. of our families to get them to the place where not that they agreed with us or that they understood what we were doing, but that they were in a place where they could be a part of it in the way mm-hmm. that God had designed them to be a part of it, rather than to cut us out of their life, so to speak. Which, you know.
Yeah, and it was, of course, horrible timing. I just launched into the commercial real estate business.
Starting his own business.
You know,
a year, maybe a year and a half. It was a horrible time.
Right.
It was. My dad had just finished
staying
having
home
cancer.
Mom.
It was all kinds of...
It's like
of...
if you ever wait to have enough money or enough time to have a kid, you'll never have
it's
one,
never
right?
Happen.
You just do it. Yeah. So anyways, those were some of the attacks.
Yeah.
But we said, all right, we answer to God and we are going to follow him. And that was the choice that we made. And so it wasn't an easy road by any means. But
it was so clear. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's kind of like I think about I've told the kids this, there are going to be things in your life where you're not going to have any doubts.
Mm-hmm. Did that clarity help sustain you
Absolutely.
Through the fears and all that?
And I remember going through those classes too, and I'm purposefully pulled away from the microphone. Got to get composure here. But just there was one session in particular, as I was wrecked.
How many sessions were there, Jill, total?
It was like 2 weeks worth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we went 3 nights a week for 3 hours at a time. And then 2 full Saturdays because, you know, we were licensed through the state of Texas, and we ended up keeping our license for about 4 years. But you have to do all of the aggression things, like learning how to do the holds on kit. Like there's a lot that the classes entail, the CPR, the first aid.
Because as a foster, you're saying we're open to maybe this age range, but whatever age range, there can be family origin, there can be a lot of stuff kid comes.
Absolutely.
Yes. But with our agency in particular, because it was a ministry based, you know, we didn't get paid or anything like that. They do not give you a child older than your youngest child.
Okay.
So at the time, I want to say Gracie was around 5 maybe when we started, or maybe Gracie was 5 when we went to family camp. And so she was about 5 or so close to 5 when we started, you know, when we got licensed and everything. Yeah. And normally you get we got licensed pretty quickly, but we waited. Sometimes they're like, the call will come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had a special ring on my phone to know when Kim would call. Her name is Kim that runs the agency. And We had a couple of different little placements where we did some respite care for foster families who wanted to go on vacation or different things, and we took care of their kiddos for them. And then all this had started in June of 2011. And that's when, and the waiting part was a little bit hard for me because I was like, okay, God said to do this. So let's go. And that's not really the way it happened. And now as I look back, I can, like I said earlier, I can see now that the Lord had to do some work in hearts. Plus he had to do some in mine because this all started in June. We got licensed by like, I think beginning of September-ish. But I had said at that time, I only want an adoption placement. I don't want a foster. Because I was worried about having a child in our home and then them leaving. And so I struggled with that for a time. And then around end of January, February 2012, I was like, okay, I just felt the Lord going, look, I've gotten you this far. You're X amount, whatever years old, you know, just let me do my thing here. And you're just going to have to trust me. And that was kind of my theme that year was God going, are you going to trust me? And I'm like, yes, I'm going to trust you. And so I called Kim and I said, I know I said we wouldn't foster, but now I feel like that God's saying, you know, yes, we will. And so that was February-ish of 2012. And I also had told myself, just because this is how I am, I'm a planner, that back in June, I was like, well, let's think about this as I told Barclay, I think I felt like the Lord had kind of revealed to me that the baby was in the womb. And I go, I don't know why. I just feel like we're supposed to be praying for a baby in the womb. And it was at that time around July, like we brought the kids in. We were like, this is what we're going to do. We have no idea what this looks like. They're 5 and 6 years old. But we're going to start praying for baby Peschel. We don't know if it's a boy. We don't know if it's a girl. We don't know anything. But God says, we're adding to your family and we're going to start praying. And so
let's pray for baby Peschel.
Yeah.
And so that was, so they were involved from, within a week or two of us coming home, just feel like this is what we're supposed to do. Said, all right.
We started the classes and we told the kids.
We want our kids to be a part of it, the good and the bad.
Yeah. Did you ever have a foster, did you ever foster any kids?
We did some short-term stuff.
Okay, some respite care.
We did the respite care. And then so back in February of 2012, that's when I said, hey, okay, we'll foster.
Right.
And back in June also, I'd said, you know, let's think of it as for myself, a friend of mine. She goes, knowing you, let's just say, you know, let's say whatever, like, okay, let's think of it as 9 months from now, maybe there'll be a baby. So you just don't think about it till then. I was like, okay, yeah, that's good. And so when we go back and we kind of count the timeline, Bella would have been conceived in June when the Lord called us. And she was born March 30th, 2012. And I had started when we came back going, and we both did, here and there going to street church, kind of hanging out with the street moms and just holding babies in the childcare area and stuff like that. And I want to say beginning of March, maybe I went one of the weeks we went to street church. We were there and this girl started. She was really pregnant and I'm like, you know, are you all right? She looked weird and she smelled like she'd never bathed in her life. And I'm like, what can I? She was like, I just don't feel very good. And I'm like, well, sit down. Let me go get there. I had pizza that night. So I was like, do you like pizza? She's like, I love pizza. And I was like, let me get you some. So sit here. I went and got her pizza, brought it to her, talked to her for a minute. And then I went and they sent me to go do something. I don't know what. And later she had a seizure. So they grabbed me for some reason and said, come sit with this girl and, you know, sit with her. The ambulance is on the way. Then like the
just pray over
and pray for her and stuff. And I was like, absolutely. You know, and they were like, and let's get these other homeless people away from her. And so we're trying to get the people away. And So, I mean, I laid my hands on her belly. I prayed for the baby. I prayed for her. The ambulance came, took her, you know. I didn't know her name. I didn't know anything really about her. And so I would kept trying to ask people when I would go back to street church if they knew anything.
Right.
And nobody really knew. And then we get to May and we get a call. And in this time period, they also take jail babies. They do a lot with jail babies. So a lot of moms
are incarcerated.
Right. Yes. And they can get their baby pretty much to anybody. Okay. But the lady from our organization had, you know, met some girls different times. They had written to her. Yeah. You know, some of these girls have been in the homeless ministry. Yeah. And then they would call Kim and say, you know, I'm going to the hospital. Will you come get my baby? Well, we had,
I think three.
I was substituting at the time, mm-hmm. teaching at the school and where the kids were. And I think we had three total babies fall through that were
false alarms.
Jail
babies.
And you're like, this is it, Lord, you've done it. Hey, kids, guess what? What we've been praying for.
Yeah, and they were all boys. Okay. And each time when the girl would get to the hospital, have the baby, she would call someone random to come get the baby because CPS automatically gets involved. If you've had any issue with CPS, whatever you're in jail for, if it has anything to do with kids, there's such a tiny chance that CPS is going to allow you to have your child back. So all that being said, then we get this call and they're like, hey, can y'all, I think it was a Tuesday. They're like, can y'all come Wednesday to street church? And we're like, okay. And they were like, we have this mom. She's had her baby. They're living on the streets with this baby. Mm-hmm. The baby's 8 weeks old. Mm-hmm. And she grew up in, the birth mom grew up in foster care. She doesn't want CPS to take the baby, but CPS has found them.
Now you've already had three that have fallen through. This is the fourth one.
So this is another one. And they're like, come to street church.
Not a jail baby, but
are you kind of like, and we're not going to get our hopes up?
Yeah. Well, and they said it's going to be a 2 week placement. They just
need for 2 weeks. They're like, they're going to try to find somewhere to live. They've been living on the streets for 2 months with a baby. You know, they want to try to do this and that and get their lives together, blah, blah, blah. Will y'all come? And we were like, okay. So we get there. And
just you two or the kids
we didn't take the kids to street church until they were way older.
Okay.
For many reasons. But we went that night and they did not have a baby with them. But when I walked up, I looked at the girl and I said, hey.
Same girl.
Do you remember me? Yes. Yeah. Pizza girl prayed over her belly. Yeah. And
did she remember her?
She remembered me.
Okay.
I remembered her. Yeah. We hugged, whatever. The baby was not there with them, but we met them. We talked to them. And she was like, absolutely, this is who I want the baby to stay with.
Yeah.
Her name, she had a different name at the time.
Okay.
She said, this is who I want her to stay with while we get our life, get everything together. Yeah. And I was like, we'd be happy to take care of your baby. We'll love her. And when you're ready, you know, whatever.
And you're only thinking this is for 2 weeks?
Yes.
And Lord, what an amazing thing you did. I got to meet her before.
Yes, but in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. I prayed this could be the baby that we've been praying for.
Were you thinking that, Barkley? Or you're thinking?
She has a lot better memory than I do.
I was thinking that moment I laid eyes on her, I was like, oh my gosh, Lord.
Is
this baby
on the birth mom? I was like, is this it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. especially given the fact of what had happened before. Yeah. But we also know the history of if this is a pretty common where you'll have a short-term placement the parents
are
supposed to quote-unquote work
get
their services
right
so that they can have and but a lot of times they just don't. They want
don't.
To
well
but
they're
they
homeless
just don't do
and so after we left there that night we were kind of like okay what's gonna happen. The next day was the last day of school for the kids and so they were the caseworkers. They were all supposed to be meeting them at a McDonald's down in the Fifth Ward somewhere. And so I got a text that morning and they said, we're on our way. And I was like, okay. They get there. She's at the McDonald's. There's no baby. And supposed birth dad is not there. And so she wants to sign all the papers, but she said his mom has the baby. And so his mom pretty much lived in a shack that was falling apart, rats, feces on the floor, drugs in and out of the house, just not where you raise a baby. They're not homeless, but they're as close as you can be. And so that's where the baby was that morning. And all of a sudden, the birth dad shows up and he's very angry, so to speak. And they just said they felt like this dark cloud came in to McDonald's with him and was hovering, you know, kind of over the table. And so they just said, y'all need to be praying. And so we started praying and they said, I don't know what happened other than...
You're driving to the McDonald's.
We're not going to the McDonald's. We're at home.
Caseworker or Kim's there or whoever.
They're all there. And it's we're just waiting to find out what's going to happen. So they ended up, I don't know, dad changed his mind for just a moment. Mm-hmm. And they both signed the placement papers. And they drove to, Kim followed him. They all followed him, took him to the house where they were,
the mom's house.
And the birth mom was able to go in and said, oh, my friend's just going to keep the baby for the weekend for me so that I can, you know, he and I can find, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they just weren't sure if they were going to be able to get the baby out of there.
Sure.
And somehow... the Lord intervened and they did. Okay. And they texted me and they said the baby, she's strapped in the back. And we'll meet y'all at Denny's. And Katie.
Yep. So we got the kids loaded up.
You got the kid. All right, kids, get in here.
Come on. Let's go. Let's go pick up this baby.
Who wants a grand slam?
Yeah. We got a grand slam.
Oh,
well,
I was so sick to my stomach. I couldn't eat anything.
Yeah. Excited, scared, nervous. Oh, we're all those and five more things. Okay. Yeah.
So,
because again, because of who the birth mom was, there's just something in me going, this is it. This is what you've been praying for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, all that. And then we get there and she was so cute, but she was so dirty. Come on, let's get her in the car. I can't wait to get her in the bath. I'm going to clean that hair. I'm going to clip those fingernails. They had like dirt. Oh, I was like, oh my gosh. I got a bow for that hair. I got new clothes.
How old is she at this point?
She's 8 weeks
old. Didn't you put a bow in her hair in the car?
I think I might have. I had a toy for her. I had a pacifier. Oh, yeah. I had a new blanket. Yeah. I had everything. And, you know, we got her home and everything. And that kind of began.
And this is now summer break started?
Yes. Okay. So summer started and it was supposed to be a 2-week placement.
Then it was another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And
then,
but at the end of the 2 weeks, they're like, no, they, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they did call and want. So they, at some point at the end of the 2 weeks, they wanted her back.
Okay.
And they started calling saying, we want our baby, give her back, blah, blah, blah. Well, CPS got involved at that point and said, the baby's in a safe place and you cannot have her yet. Right. You must do blah, blah,
complete
X,
all
Y,
the things
Z,
you gotta do.
Yeah. Your service hours, you must do these classes, la, la, la. And so that started a year-long journey, basically. We picked her up. It was May 20th. And so that was a year-long battle as the short and skinny of it is that the attacks continued. Mm-hmm. They went to the police station. Mm-hmm. They told the police that we had kidnapped their child.
Sure.
They tried to get a lawyer. There's something in downtown, like at the library, that meets every so often, and different lawyers come in there that do pro bono type things. And they tried to get somebody to take their case, and they were like, you know, there's no case. Yeah. And they just did a bunch of different things. And eventually, CPS closed the case down around October of that year.
Which is so weird because they hadn't even come to our home or anything, had they?
No. One lady showed up one time, saw Bella or in the baby care, and she was like, yep, she's safe, okay, thanks, and left. And it was through Harris County, and they closed the CPS case. So that was in October. They start calling again our caseworker, and they're like, our case is closed. You have to give our baby back, blah, 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 blah. So we went for about 12 hours that day in October, not knowing if we were giving her back. And now we've had her since May.
Yeah.
And now we're completely attached. And they're like, be prepared that you might be giving her back today. And I was like, to homeless people?
Yeah. You're beginning to grieve with death, really.
And that's where you start getting those crazy thoughts.
That's where you get those crazy thoughts that you're like, okay, we're leaving the country.
Right.
Well, because you know what she's going to go back to. And you're like, Lord, how does this...
Right.
This is not right.
Right.
How can this be right? And so the kids were at school that day. I got the call after I got back from taking the kids to school because I was not working at that time. And they just said, you need to get everyone you know praying. And so basically we went about 12 hours that day and not knowing, but feeling a huge peace. Eventually just a peace knowing that, because I was like, I don't know what to pray. I don't even know. You know, I just bawled. And so, but we went to lunch. I remember we were in Churrasco's and she was sitting beside me in a baby carrier, just sleeping so soundly. I couldn't even eat. I don't even know why we went there because I like their plantains. But I was just like, I was like, do you feel that? And you were like, what? And I go, I just feel peace. I was like, people are praying. And no matter what, it's going to be okay. She's going to be okay no matter what.
And we, you know, we knew even if we were going to have to bring her back and we would never see her again, we knew that the time that we had her in our home could affect effective for the rest of her
it's
life.
It's not like, wasted.
It's not wasted.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it had been for 48 hours, it would not have been wasted. So anyway, we ended up, I guess we got a call later that afternoon and they said CPS closed the case, which means they cannot have her back because they have not done any of their services. But the bad news is that CPS also is not removing her from their custody.
So their rights aren't terminated yet.
So their rights weren't terminated. And so within about a little bit after that, we find out birth mom's pregnant again. Okay. And so Bella is, I don't know, like 7 months old, maybe.
She's in the super duper cute stage.
She is. And she's like, yes. And so anyway, long story short, the kids are convinced that she's going to be our Christmas present, that they just are convinced that God's going to give us this baby. And I just wasn't convinced, but my kids
Did you try
were,
and talk that down? Hey, don't get, cause
all along we were like, listen, who's in control here? Yeah. And they were like, God. And I'm like, that's right. And I'm like, we don't get to decide. If we got to decide, she'd already be ours, but we don't get to decide. And I said, we just have to trust God that he's got the best plan
for
her. So
all along, you're not getting to decide. You know, he's orchestrating this, you know, chance meeting at family camp and kicking and screaming going. And so all along, and we get back up to how you guys met all along. He's sovereignly,
and
gently,
we just need to keep reminding
lovingly,
our kids. And as I say it to our kids every time, I'm like, okay, I gotta feel this. I gotta grasp this and hold on to it. But
so it's October,
and now it's November and Thanksgiving, and we got to a point where I was like, okay, if the Lord takes her, she is a huge part of our story. And so I had family pictures made in November.
Okay,
I was like, she. Okay. I want this memory. And it's really my second time because I had them done right at the 2 week mark before they were going to take her again. Cause we were pretty nuts about her after 2 weeks, but I tried to hold back the best I could, but you know, and eventually we had changed her name and the kids were calling her Bella already. And I couldn't do it. I called her every nickname under the sun, but at the beginning of December, I had oral surgery on my mouth, I remember, and he had brought me home and the kids were at school and I got a call and they were like, she was like, I don't know how to tell you this, Jill, but birth mom is she's coming in tomorrow and she wants to relinquish her rights.
Wow.
And I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. So we went on this 24 hour nonstop praying until, because they were going to have to get in the van, go pick her up. So the next day I'm getting the texts, she's in the van and I'm like, okay, birth dad's not going. He refuses. She, they've got her in the van. Then I get the next text. She's in the office, 3 hours worth of, you know, and the papers are signed.
Right.
So she relinquished, signs her rights away. And so we're one step closer, you know, and so.
Because dad has.
Dad has to also.
And he will not.
Right.
And it's really kind of a, it's almost like a pride thing for the street dads to, you know, they just refuse, you know, even if they don't even know for sure that they're the dad.
Right.
But anyway, so
it's
long
more about
story.
Them than it's
yeah,
about the kid.
But it happened before Christmas. Of course it did. So Lord used my kids to teach me, you know, about his faithfulness. And then
we had to go through the court process.
Then we went to the court process with dad
to, for the judge to actually remove
right,
his
the
rights.
Judge had to.
And so we're at that point. We're standing in the, we're standing before the judge and he says, okay. And he makes, goes and calls the name of the dad and he gets the bailiff, says, you need to go into the hall.
I'm like,
you need to call his name to see if he's here. And so we're just sitting there, like all the air is just sucked out of the room, waiting for someone to walk, waiting for him to walk through the door. Cause they knew, of course they've been notified in the paper. And so we didn't think he was going to show, but you just didn't know. And so,
and and you have no idea if any of his family members might show up.
We were thinking the
we thought the mom had tried, the mom had called, she wanted the baby, you know, and, but she'd already had so many problems over the years with CPS. There was no way they were going to give it to her, but she still was threatening and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
There's a million things that happened.
Of course, you know how screwed up the system is. So you're thinking anything could happen.
Right. Yes.
It doesn't
right.
make logical sense that this could happen.
I think I was holding my breath.
Right.
And we're in the courtroom. I did not bring Bella with me. Bella's at home with one of my best friends at my house. But I have Bella's birth sister because she's only 3 weeks old.
So
and
we're
we
temporarily
had to take,
fostering her.
We took her from the hospital because CPS was going to put her into foster care or she goes with the sibling.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my gosh, of course. You know, Bella's 10 months old, not adopted. But I went and took her sister from the hospital and brought her home. And so I've got her with me because she's so little. I didn't want to leave her with my friend. And so we're there. And then eventually we also, we knew we weren't supposed to keep her birth sister. We knew that she was somebody else's child. And, you know, we were told, we felt like the Lord told us to release her. But we did have her for 8 weeks. And I felt like that the 8 weeks that I did not have with Bella when she was homeless, that he gave me with her sister.
How about that?
So the judge,
just another story.
Yeah.
Another way that he redeemed the time.
So the judge, said, they call the name, no one shows up, and the bailiff comes back in, and the judge.
He removes the birth dad.
He says some very official.
Boxes of tissues. They're just throwing tissues at me.
And who's there? Are your parents? Your parents?
We did not.
No.
Okay.
One friend was with me, helping me with the baby because she was 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
We didn't want anybody else there.
Yeah,
because
we just didn't know
what's going to happen.
No.
And so then after that, then you have to finalize all the adoption stuff.
Yeah. So that happened on Bella's adoption day was May 17th. So almost a
year from when.
Yeah. So May. So she was born March 30th, 2012. We picked her up at Denny's on May 20th, 2012, and we adopted her on May 17th. 2013.
Now for that,
so
the
she
whole world was,
there
for the adoption.
Yeah, we had hundreds of.
So you knew it was going to happen, but you know there was some formal ceremony. The judge declaring.
Yes,
what did that feel
yes.
like when Barkley, when he said, the pause you're hearing is a swell of emotion.
I felt like I'd been holding my breath,
but for a year,
Yeah. And I felt like for the first time in a year, I could take a deep breath.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I felt.
And the whole while, God had not been holding his breath.
No,
he knew
not once.
What was right around the next corner, And he knew, just hang in there. Hang in. You're not going
to
believe next thing,
but
just
trust me. Do you trust me?
And it's so cool because you're in there, and it's just, it's the picture of how God adopts us into his family.
Yes, yes.
When you put your faith and your trust in him, because we're standing for the judge. He says, this old birth certificate is going away. Here's the new birth certificate. Barclay, Jill, your names are now on this. And what's the name given to this child? Mm-hmm. Bella Grace Peschel, her name's here. Mm-hmm. So we have a birth certificate. Mm-hmm. She can run away. She can do whatever she wants, but she'll always be in our family. There's nothing she can do to leave our family.
Yeah.
And so she is always ours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew.
You know, you guys mentioned in the beginning about the lines of scripture, and there's just more than just a few, but you know, things like Psalm 68, you know, God's a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, in his holy dwelling. He sets the lowly in families.
Yes, I love that verse. And we had shirts made.
Yeah, the one less, you know, the song that
Matthew West, One Less Broken Heart in the World Tonight.
T-shirts made that said
one less. And there was a verse in Mark on the back about when you love, about, oh, golly.
So a couple of things that during this whole time that really was, helped sustain us.
Yes, yes.
Of course, friends, family, prayer, music was huge for us.
Say more about that.
And
why?
Music just, I mean, it speaks to me.
Yeah.
And so we created a playlist and we just had some songs just about God's promises and love and faithfulness. Yeah. And it was at that time that Chris Tomlin's song about his angel armies. That the Whom Shall I Fear?
Yes.
I mean, that was, that was on the top. And
well,
so.
Well, because that's what we prayed from the get go before I ever heard that song, but I'd heard the verses about angels. And we prayed for an army of angels to surround this birth mom wherever she was and protect this child in utero, because she was homeless the whole 10 months of her pregnancy, you know,
and we had read
sleeping on park benches.
We read Mark Batterson's book about the circle maker and, which is similar to Jericho and Joshua leading the Israelites around Jericho and the walls falling down. And so we also had some scripture, and I wish I had that with us. If anybody wants it, we're happy to find it.
Don't find
them
and give
y'all. But
give me the words of truth about
enough.
We just
had scripture that we would just pray over.
Her.
I went and took down some of the slats on our fence, and while she was taking a nap, we all had our little kids, Jill and I, and we
gave them an index card with verses to read.
We walked around the house seven times. Yeah. We were singing. We were loud. Reciting the scripture, loud, and so we did that. And then right before
the night before
the adoption, we went.
No, the night before taking the dad's rights is when
we went to the Justice Center, and we drove around it
seven times,
just praying this.
We're putting
we're
putting our trust in you. Yeah. Here's our outward symbol of that.
It's not a trick or anything.
Right. We can't twist your arm. No. We're just saying. Our only hope is in you.
Yeah.
Which is what they were doing in Jericho. Listen, this is no way to win a battle. We're just putting our hope in you.
Yeah.
And
so, that's how we felt. We can't do this. There's nothing about this that's about us. And there's nothing about this that we can do on our own.
Yep. So having the scripture that we would regularly read and pray over and to strengthen us, and then having the music that is scripturally based. I mean, all the time. Played it all. We wore it out.
And she would wake up sometimes in the night, and she would just be screaming like somebody was hurting her. And I would go in there, and this was within that first 6 month period, because within that first 6 months, she wasn't, or the first three or first 4 months, she wasn't really doing a lot of smiling, wasn't doing giggling, wasn't meeting the milestones.
She didn't
cry because her needs hadn't been met for the first 2 months of her life.
Right.
And when I would try to hold her, she wouldn't want to lay her head on my shoulder like a normal kid does. And so those were some of the struggles as well for me.
Yeah.
And then sometimes she would wake up and I would be like, what is doing that? Mm-hmm. And we I don't know. I think because we had listened to it with our other kids, but we had all these Praise Baby DVDs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we threw them in there. And I mean, the moment the first note came out of the TV, it stopped. Mm. And it didn't stop until that worship music started. And so she's our only kid that cannot go to sleep without music, because from here on out, we played worship music in her room every night.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just great hymns and
just
songs of faith and
just because
over and over.
You just there's it's called prenatal trauma.
Yes.
You know, and you in the womb. And so just never knowing what that would ever look like. But there were these screaming things she would do. And, you know, and it's like we had to earn over a time. We had to earn her trust. Like she had to realize
you had to prove yourself.
We're not going to leave her. Yeah. And we're you know, we're here.
We're there to meet her needs. And
in a similar way, you know, this is in some ways how we experience God. Not that he has to prove himself, but that over and over, you know, over again, he's been proving himself to you. You can trust me. You can trust me.
Right.
What would you say to someone who maybe finds themselves kind of orbiting where, you know, you were 8-9 years ago, that I'm wondering about adoption. Mm. You know, I read a little bit about it. This sounds too hard. This sounds, I enjoy your story. I don't want to hold my breath for a year.
Yeah.
We wouldn't trade that time. So I'll just tell you that we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Of course we have a happy ending, right?
Right.
Not
and
everybody
has,
doesn't have
and
it.
We know people that didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
But we also know that down the road that the Lord did sustain them and that, you know, if that was a true calling for them, that the Lord did eventually, they did adopt a child. Yeah. There just were some kids that maybe came in and out of their life. And you have to look at it if you're going to do the foster part as what is my part in the story of these children? Mm-hmm. And so I, for some reason, they gave me a lot of babies. After we got Bella, I said I would do short term. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of babies straight from the hospital. Mm-hmm. So I was so tired. But I guess that's something, I was a stay-at-home mom at the time, and that's something that I could do, which was get up in the night and hold a baby and feed them and pray over them while they're, you know, all through getting up every 4 hours with them, as hard as it was.
I called her the baby whisperer because she was amazing with all these children.
Whatever.
And she would, for whoever was going to have that child, she had just set this amazing groundwork to make easier for them.
But I knew that. And people that I've talked to over time, like, I feel like I didn't have anyone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I didn't know anybody who had done what I'd done except our friend Josh and Debs. And but I didn't know anyone else. And so after that, I just really felt like anytime anyone reached out to me, I'm like, yes, what can I do? Yeah. How can I walk this with you?
Yeah. So someone listening, if they were to approach you, this would not be an inconvenience. This
absolutely not. You have to walk through it with other people.
Part of how God's now shaped you to edify and be a minister to others. Okay.
One of the common questions, thoughts we've had and questions we've had is, can you really love a child that you...
Right. Not your biological kid.
Can you love them like you're... Yeah. And it is supernatural. It is indescribable.
Yeah.
How I love that little girl.
Yeah.
Just like I love my two oldest who Jill gave birth to. It's
not any different.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You know,
crazy
we would lay
love.
Our lives down for her just the same.
A while ago, in my former church, I had an older gentleman and his kids adopted. And he said, you know, I was a little apprehensive. Am I going to love this one? And he said, you know how long it took me to love that kid? Half a second after they put him in my arms.
Yeah.
I was in head over heels and not any different at all. Yeah.
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 And I mean, I definitely would say that the foster care part is not for everybody.
Yeah.
And you can't feel bad about that. I think that adoption is just an amazing, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. The foster part is definitely is definitely difficult. And I think that the husband and the wife both, I've met a lot of people over time also where one was on board and one wasn't. And I immediately had to say, if you're both not 100% in sync on this, then this isn't something that God's calling you to, because he's going to call you both the same because you cannot do it alone. And so
it's already impossible with two people.
It's totally not any more possible than one.
Yeah.
But adoption is just, it's an amazing thing.
We call Bella
people look at our family and they know, but it doesn't feel different to me.
Yeah. Cause Bella's brown.
Yep.
We're not.
You're whitey white.
Yeah. She says we're peach.
We're peach. Yes. And so we definitely look different, but you know,
there's no difference in the way that.
Yeah. And so, you know, the scripture, overwhelmingly, the whole church needs to be engaged, but not everyone needs to be the front line. You know, some people are in the front line, and some people are supporting that.
Yeah. You don't want to do it out of guilt.
Yes.
Yes.
It needs to be a calling.
Yes, absolutely. Well, one last thing I want to sum us up here with is, how would you explain kind of the lesson or the takeaway to a young child, maybe a 9-year-old, you're a second grade teacher.
Right.
How would you describe this Barclay in a sentence or two for 9-year-olds? This is the summary of story of God's gift.
I overcomplicate everything. So Jill.
Gosh.
Can you trust God?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of, I know I've talked about this with my own children, plus with my students, just talking to them about knowing that you can trust God, that he's always going to be there. He's never going to leave you. He's never going to forsake you. And I've told my students, I'm like, I can tell you this from experience because I'm X number of years old. And I said, all I know is God's goodness in my life, and all I know is God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
And when sometimes I've trusted him and sometimes I haven't, but his faithfulness has never changed.
Yeah.
No matter how my feelings may change. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I always think about when I talk to my students just about the Israelites and stuff, and I'm like, they would come back to God, then they would turn from God. But I can show my students time and time again where the Lord continues to pursue them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I would tell someone, you know, when God's call, and you know, something else I've said is that when God's calling you to do something, when you can look back and see the different times in your life where he's been faithful, it's not really that hard. It's not as hard to trust him the next time around.
For the next hard thing. Yeah.
Because you don't know anything different but him being faithful when he asks you to trust him.
And that's where you're at now. You know, you're not done with hard things.
No.
Because we have two teenagers.
Well, you know, you're humans.
Yes.
For believers, this is as, you know, close to hell as we ever get. And so this is not the good life. The good life is yet to come.
Right.
And even this is, all the amazing parts of this are just signs pointing us to that. I want to thank you guys so much for this time and telling this story and being willing to, if you're all listeners, you're all curious about adoption or fostering and all the process, consider these two as deep resources for that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you for listening, and do us a favor and subscribe. And after you listen to a few episodes, give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have suggestions for other stories that this body needs to hear, contact me, Blake@grandparkway.org. These are the stories you've missed.